Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Yes, and it is the movie show. But it's not like usual. It's me here instead of Tozin. But as usual, there's Sharon.
Hello. Evening.
And Sean.
Hiya.
Good evening, you two. Right. I'm feeling a bit nervous because I'm not really a film buff. I'm someone who goes to the cinema to see things I like. And mostly it's British films, but not a lot wider than that. I like things with a true story.
Yeah, well, that's I think we embrace all types of cinema goers here, the casual and the more dedicated. So give us an idea of what you'd like to watch. You've said you like sort of British films. What's your favourite film? Have you got a favourite film?
What's my favourite film? It's actually probably not a British film. It's actually 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Wow. Well, it has got... wasn't it filmed largely in this country? So it's got that...
Some of it was, yeah, quite a lot of it.
I think it's got that mood, though, hasn't it? Yeah. That it's that sort of takes a step back from the... flashy.
Yeah, it's Stanley Kubrick, and so, you know, back in his day of making films, they were the blockbusters of the day, and it's a film which was at its time very, very dramatic. It was produced, you know, just after we'd landed on the moon, and people were kind of really questioning what was going on in outer space. And it starts out with that kind of future feel of space, and then it suddenly drops back to the past, and there's some very clever bits which links the whole thing together. And I think one of the best bits for me is the sort of psychedelic parts. I think Kubrick might have had a few drops of something, to do those bits. And so, you know, it then goes into, you know, the bit where he's in the bed as an old man, and I like those bits because they're unusual. They're not, you know, I tend to like films which follow real life properly, closely, and not absurdly over dramatically. But when it comes to something like that, then it is totally beyond, and it's something I go for.
It had lots of influence on filmmakers, isn't it? I mean, it was a really, really influential film.
Well, we're now getting to that point where people who grew up on those sort of films, and a film we've often referenced before on other shows, is things like Silent Runnings. People who grew up on these films from the 70s, they're now the ones who are making films themselves. And you can see those influences.
Yeah, yeah.
We have often said we can see the influence of, like, you know, 2001, Space Odyssey, and Silent Runnings, and those sort of like slightly dippy mid-70s films that were, they have their own sort of genre of themselves, don't they, that's unique to that time. But people, they've influenced people beyond their day.
For sure they have, yeah. And I think what it was is because space was still interesting around about that time, and it was just like the leaps forward were coming. I think people were becoming more interested in what the future possibly could, you know, what the future could possibly hold. So it was real poignant at the time, I think.
Yeah. So,
well, that's a good one to get us.
That's a great one. One of my number one films, definitely.
Well, Kubrick films are generally pretty good. Yeah. Have you ever seen, just out of interest, Barry Lyndon?
No, I haven't. No. Now, it's one I want to see. I haven't seen, and it's definitely one I want to see. The lighting in that is supposed to be superb.
It's painterly. We went to see it last year, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
We had almost like a private screening. There's only three of us in the whole cinema. Yeah. We had the screening to ourselves. Mm. But they did a screening at Cineworld as the anniversary of when it was made. What, 40, 50? 50 years it must have been.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Or thereabouts. Really. But it is stunning. If you just imagine... it was just like a painting. Yeah. And it's only when someone moves that you realise that it's actually, that it's real. It is stunning. It's quite stunning.
Movie. You know, and
it's like the Rake's Progress, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a scene where people are like maybe sat in certain poses in chairs with wine glasses or whatever, and they're really still, aren't they? And it could almost be, you know,
one of those classic old master,
terrific stuff.
Yeah, yeah, so that was, yeah, he had an eye, didn't he, for just framing a shot or just for capturing a mood.
I think he was supposed to be tough to work with, though.
I think, yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, in a sense, then the Kubrick trilogy, you've got Clockwork Orange, which, again, is a very strange film because it's Anthony Burgess's
novel
and play. And Kubrick does what Kubrick does with it. He keeps very close to the original play, but then leaves off the end, because I know that because I actually played the part of Alexander in the stage play of Anthony Burgess' Clockwork Orange.
Wow.
And there's a whole scene, 21, which doesn't appear in Kubrick's film. It's all about a situation where Alex is brought back to normality and things like that, a redemption kind of scene. And it doesn't happen in the film. No. So he leaves it as a much more darker thing.
Yeah, I think that can happen with books, plays, and when they're made into films.
Yeah, there's like a translation almost, isn't there? Brian Friel wrote the play, didn't he? Translations about how things evolve and change just by that creative process. In that case, about making maps. But it relates to anything, doesn't it? You find that by changing it from one medium to another, things do get changed in that process.
Well, I think that great series Game of Thrones has got changed, isn't it, from what you were saying? There we go.
I know we talked
about that, but that's a cinematic
experience. It's one of the, I think of almost like, it's like two paths, that they start off side by side, and then they just diverge. And now at the point where they're, to me, it's like they're unrecognisable as starting from the same place. So that's what I feel about Game of Thrones. Or I'm still holding out for A Song of Ice and Fire to be redeemed by the next book. Okay. As far as I'm concerned, we don't know what happens to Jon Snow. He's been stabbed and we've left it at that.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
So that's not a recent cinema release. But actually touching on what you say about you like films that are based on reality, I think our first film is based on a true story, isn't it, Sean?
Yes, it is indeed.
Sean, you were the one who went to see it.
I did, yes.
And what is it?
Well, this film is called The Post, starring Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, so good cast, and directed by Steven Spielberg. And it is the story of a newspaper that gets access to the Pentagon page, which starts off with Robert McNamara, a really interesting character, and he went to Vietnam in the 60s, and he commissioned some people to investigate and decided that the Vietnam War could not be won. So there were all these papers, but because the Americans, or the president at the time, didn't want to say that they were committed, and they didn't want to lip, so they decided they'd keep going. So this big batch of papers, and so you've got this Washington Post, and the Meryl Streep is like, she now owns the Washington Post because her husband has died. And it's the whole story of, they got idea to these papers. Does she publish them? Does she not publish them? She's a real friend with this Robert McNamara as well. So the society she's sort of involved in is, you know, all the people she knows that are actually going to be harmed if she publishes. The other newspaper, I forget which newspaper it is, the government put an injunction that they're not allowed to publish these papers. So they've got to decide, do they want to publish these papers? So in the end, they do go ahead and they publish these papers. But it's of the period, and it's, I mean, I'm really interested in this period of time because obviously I was very young when the Vietnam War was on.
Is this the same time as like the Watergate type scandals going on, or is it similar time before that?
It's before, and funnily enough, I don't know if people have seen All the President's Men, which is about the Watergate scandal.
Right. Yeah.
I suppose without, I don't know if this would be a spoiler or not, but basically the last bit, should we say, you know, sets it up for...
Yes, I read that it steps into All the President's Men as
it does
almost
indeed
as the closing scene.
Exactly right, yeah, exactly right. It's just like that. So it does all this, and then it goes, you know, the policeman, you know, and I think there's been a burglary.
Right.
And that's it. So it basically is about the same time. And you never actually see Nixon. You just see him through a window of the White House on the phone saying, we're not going to, you know, and he's really, he's quite... quite vitriolic and quite nasty, but because, you know, he was a crook, I guess. On about that, we were talking about Anthony Hopkins, weren't we?
Yes.
And he actually played Nixon in a movie.
Oh, does he?
There's a movie called
Nixon,
isn't
there? Yes, he
does. Yes, he does. Yeah.
So I mean, that I might
it's
have to revisit
recently,
that.
It's more recently. Frank Langella was Nixon in Frost Nixon, wasn't he?
Frost Nixon.
He played him very
that's
well.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, Frost Nixon.
And I read somewhere about the Post that the voice of Nixon that you hear is actually Nixon's voice from the White House tapes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you know, it did sound, because I thought that, because you never actually see, you only see this sort of profile.
Enough
of
to suggest who it is.
Enough to suggest who it is. Yeah. But it did sound like Tricky Dicky. It did actually sound, and I thought that. I thought, wow, they've got that voice, you know, off to a T. So
yeah, I think they used the original tapes. Yeah.
But, I mean, there's some great performances in this, great performances. I think we were talking earlier, Sharon, weren't we, about Spotlight, which was a film from last year.
About films about investigative journalism, you know, All the President's Men, Spotlight, are sort of two notable ones. I mean, there's been others about, haven't there, that, you know, there's something about the investigative journalist that sort of appeals to filmmakers.
Mm. Yeah.
Sometimes maybe more than to audiences, but they certainly are good food for films.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed this movie. I wouldn't have said it was as good as Spotlight, but I still enjoyed this movie. Although there were a couple of scenes, there was a demonstration scene of, you know, stop the war, which seemed a bit, you know, you had the veteran in the wheelchair and all in those sort of hippies going into 70s clothes. Yeah, that type of thing. And they all got placards and that. I found that a little bit unnecessary, perhaps, you know, so only for a short scene, and it probably makes no difference to the story whatsoever.
Do you think it was just put in really as a sort of
perhaps a period,
get the feeling of the period
really? Period piece. I think that's probably what's been, but the actor who plays Robert McNamara was I mean, having seen, when I've watched documentaries about Vietnam, there was recently a really good one on BBC4. Terrific. And they had, you know, like sometimes you look at these characters and you think, like the new Churchill film, and, you know, Darkest Hour, and the looks, you know, they get them to look.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And he looked like Bob McNamara. And I thought it was him at the beginning when he's actually on the plane. I thought it was really, really good casting as well. Terrific casting. Because I think with Meryl, she doesn't really play you don't think. She's sort of quite she's not major strong. Oh yes, we're gonna, you know, she's very thoughtful, and she's very, she sort of almost timid, should we say,
reflective,
you know? Reflective, that's a great word. Yeah, reflective. So I think if you saw the post, or if you've seen All the President's Men, or you like investigative journalism, it is a really, really good movie on that side.
As it's quite a uniquely American story. It's about the Vietnam War, and it's about the exposing you know, sort of scandals in the White House. Is there enough in it for like the British audience to sort of get behind or get into? Because that's one of the things that put me off. I'm thinking, am I interested enough? Because with Spotlight, I mean, obviously it was talking about these priests, and it was something that we'd all experienced when looking at the news, and it was like global. It was almost like had implications beyond the sort of the world in which the film was set. Whereas this is almost like very American, isn't it? Is there enough in there just as a good film to draw us in as the British viewer?
That's a really, really good point, actually, because, it is. And unless you're like me, that are particularly interested in that period of time, then maybe not. You mean as just seeing it as an investigative journalist?
As a piece of filmmaking, or as just someone like as a thriller, or as a, you know, as a thoughtful piece of filmmaking, because I haven't seen it, so I'm just making my assessment based on
one trailer. Time,
that's food for thought. That is, I would say, probably if you didn't know much about the time and much about the era, it might seem might be a little bit draggy, perhaps. So, but I guess with me enjoying that, that's what made it. You know, because I knew who the people were. You know, when they were talking about these people, and I think if you know that, I mean. Back to
we talked about Darkest Hour, didn't we?
Darkest Hour with like Halifax, whereas
because I knew that period of history, I was interested in that period of history, so I didn't. No one needed to explain to me who Halifax was. I knew who he was, or who Clement Attlee was. I knew who he was, and it's like, you know, the period in which it's set. You know what happened immediately before what you see, and you know what happens after what you see. So seeing that sort of snapshot in time was like revealing, because you weren't learning anything new, but it was like opening your eyes onto something that maybe you hadn't seen in that detail before. Yeah. So I was fascinated by it, but I was familiar with it. Mm. Whereas this, I don't know a lot about the Vietnam War other than the big headlines, you know, that we've picked up by watching Platoon or Full Metal Jacket or something. Yeah. And I don't really know much about that Nixon's White House other than what I've seen through film. So it's not been a period I've been drawn to. So I'm thinking, was there enough in the film with the performances and with just the, how it unfolds to say, yeah, it's worth seeing, even if you don't know that period.
That is a terrific point, actually. That is a terrific point.
I think I'm looking forward to seeing it because I grew up with Vietnam on the television every night when I was in my teens. And it was a big thing. And I was getting to the point of being aware more politically in that sort of time, you know, and there were a lot of, even in Britain, sort of stop the war campaigns going on against Vietnam.
Well, all over all over Europe, really. Yeah. Paris, you know, everywhere.
Because the French fought in Vietnam, didn't they? We stayed out. Is it the French and the Australia did join?
Australians were there. We were not
the Americans
there in an official capacity.
Mm. There was. Oh, I don't know, perhaps going to a bit of a history lesson there. There was, you know, like we had NATO. Well, some nations formed the thing CETO, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, and the Australians and the New Zealanders were involved in that, and I think Korea and a few other countries, which were, but we wouldn't go, we didn't want to get involved because of the Suez thing in 57.
Suez, and I suppose,
okay, you slapped us in the face with Suez.
A decade before.
You slapped us in the face with Suez, so we don't really want to, because we were in Malaya. Around the same time with the Malayan emergency. Yeah. So, but we were much, much more successful.
So, and there'd been the Korean War and things like that that had.
And we'd been.
I think British government jaded towards that sort of thing.
The smaller conflicts, that they could be costly.
It as a bit too far off for us, really. Yeah. Again,
it is really. But I'm like you. You know, when you grew up, because it was on the TV, wasn't it? And it was, you know, footage. Oh, there's been another, you know, 500.
Now, you mentioned Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
The other big star, Tom Hanks. Right. A little thing I found out as well. He was a close neighbour in real life to Ben Bradley, the character he plays.
Really?
He lived a few doors away down there, wherever they lived, him and Ben Bradley. He plays that part now. What about his?
Yeah, he's great. Tom Hanks is—he just seems to be so versatile, you know. Because this is—you could imagine him as a bit bullish, you know, like those 70s, maybe almost like those 70s trade union leaders in the 70s. You know, he's got his sleeves rolled up, and he's like, "Well," and he takes no nonsense, and he says, "What are you still doing here? You know, you should be out working." So yeah, he's very bullish. Plays it, you know. And Tom Hanks, I just think, is a really versatile actor. Did you ever listen to him on Desert Island Discs?
No.
When he was talking, he just said he's done nothing wrong. He did really well at school. He did that, nothing wrong. But he's just been incredibly lucky. Really, really nice guy. But in this, he's great. He is a proper, real, bullish character. And as I say, a Meryl, really reflective, but almost like she... start off with sheepish, you know, and like they were saying, oh, you shouldn't be doing this, you know, you should not be, you shouldn't be. And she's like, ooh, you know, and you think, oh, she's going to cave in to all the pressure, you know, she's going to cave in.
But, yeah. I'm personally a great, great fan of Tom Hanks and see him, like you say, is a very versatile actor, very versatile player. And it occurred to me the other day, and I don't know whether you agree or not, he seems to be our latter day James Stewart.
He has sort of inherited that sort of mantle,
you know,
hasn't he?
From his, like To Kill a Mockingbird kind of character and things like that. The things
that was
I've seen.
That was Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck.
It's a Wonderful Life.
The other one, no, 12...
12 Angry Men. Was that Henry Fonda?
That was it. Shows how good I am with films, doesn't it?
But...
James Stewart was in a courtroom drama, though. He did do a courtroom drama. I can't think what it was, but he played the prosecutor.
I think of it in a minute. I think it was a Hitchcock film. Yes. It was a Mistaken Identity film, wasn't it? And was that Henry Fonda as well? Anyway, we're going back into it.
He's like a gentleman player,
isn't he? You get the feeling that he's a gentleman.
We'll take a break for some adverts. We'll do a little bit more on the post when we come back. And then we'll talk about The Commuter as well, that you went to see as well, Sean.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
Local fundraiser Ian Gregory is cycling 2,000 miles around Australia to raise money for four local charities dubbed the White Unity Heroes, as well as national charity Prostate Cancer UK. The White Unity Heroes are Challenge and Adventure, Isle of Wight Pride, Layla's Trust and the Isle of Wight Zoo. You can donate via a dedicated Just Giving link, or you can give cash donations at Challenge and Adventure in Lugley Street, Newport, or at the Isle of Wight Zoo. And if you're a business, you can become a corporate sponsor to help fund Ian's costs. A donation of just £50 via his GoFundMe page will get you advertising throughout 2018 at various fundraising events. For more information, head to Facebook and search White Unity Heroes.
Hello, it's Roger from Central Garage Riverway in Newport, long-established island dealers for the economical Citroën range of cars and vans. We recently welcomed the exciting range of Subaru four-wheel drive SUVs, with a choice of practical estate cars to our sporty, rally-proven family SUV, the WRX STI. The latest Citroën and Subaru models are on display, so why not pop in? Or, for our sales, service and parts staff, just ring 526541. Central, for Citroën and Subaru.
Star Signings Isle of Wight, the island's only AFTEL authorised dealer and a unique place for authentic signed memorabilia. If you're looking for something special for yourself or a really wonderful present, we are here with incredible gifts from all around the world. Whether it's Lionel Messi, Muhammad Ali or Paul McCartney, we have their autographs in store for you. All our autographs come fully authenticated and are sourced by Channel 4's Authenticate It or gained in person by former Premier League player Steve Jones. Why not pop in to see Dean and have a look around for yourself? You won't be disappointed.
And now a message from ICEC in Freshwater, the catering equipment company. ICEC are proud sponsors of the 4Ps project. We believe the 4Ps course is an amazing opportunity for young people on the island to boost their life skills through radio. The course benefits so many people and is a credit to all involved. To find out how ICEC can help with your catering equipment needs, call them on 01983 756 628 or check out the website icec1.co.uk.
This is a recruiting announcement for C Company, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Army Cadet Force, who are recruiting in your area now. We are looking for 12 to 18-year-olds or in Year 8, so please come along and see them. They parade evenings from 7 till 9 at locations situated across the Isle of Wight. For more information, call Company Headquarters on 01983 522 427. I repeat, 01983 522 427. Or you can visit armycadets.com. Do it now.
As well as being able to listen to Vectis Radio on glorious FM 104.6, there are other ways of listening to Vectis Radio. You can check us out online, www.vectisradio.com, click the player. You can download the app from your app store, it's completely free of charge. Or if you have one of these, Echo, play Vectis Radio on TuneIn.
Vectis Radio from TuneIn.
This is the new music show on Vectis Radio. Kieran Thompson at the mic tonight.
So you can take your favourite community radio station with you wherever you go at no extra cost.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, broadcasting from the Riverside Centre in Newport, giving people the opportunity to broadcast no matter their age or ability. We make entertaining radio whilst offering affordable advertising for local businesses. Vectis Radio. VectisRadio.com.
And here we are back with the movie review show, and it's Sharon and Sean. Sean, yes. You went and saw The Commuter.
I did, yes.
But we're going to have a little bit of time. I think, first of all, we're going to talk about Coco.
Yes, yeah, we are.
And I need to do a little bit of technical fiddling here because we had an email from
He may not be
Tosin.
With us in body, but Tosin is with us in spirit. But as we finish off the post, what would you give it out of five then, surely, for the post?
The post, I would say if you like films about investigative journalism, it's worth a watch. I'd give it a three and a half. I would
okay,
say
good,
so.
Good
so
good.
Yeah, so it's not it's not like amazing, but it's worth a watch.
It's worth a watch. Good.
Yeah. Well, I'll be going in a couple of weeks' time, definitely.
Well, you can let us know then.
Yeah,
you give us your feedback.
That's what we've done before. We've rated it, and then whenever we've caught up with a film, we've given our own rating to see if we agree or where we differ, which can be sometimes more interesting. But yeah, Tosin, he's not with us in body tonight because he's preparing to reveal his all in a production of The Full Monty.
Sorry, this makes me giggle.
I suppose sometimes it does take a bit of preparation to gird your loins or not,
yeah,
as the case may be.
He phoned up earlier and I said, just don't get cold.
But I think he loves his acting as well as his producing and other things. So I think he's just probably as happy as Larry doing that. So we wish him well anyway. Wish him well, Toes. I'm sure he's going to listen to this later. But he sent us an email about a film that he saw this week called Coco. Now, Coco is one of my... That's why he's got me to read it out, is because Coco is an animated film. I may go to see one a year, but... Yeah.
Just to pop in there, I spoke to Tosin a bit earlier and he says, oh, I've seen a film because I know it wouldn't be your sort of film and I know Sharon won't go and see it. So I thought I'd send an email.
Covers the new releases. But yeah, Coco is an animated film and it's basically based on the Mexican idea, the Day of the Dead. You know, the celebration of your recently departed loved ones. But I'll read what Tosin says and then we can sort of chip in and see what we think. And so the greeting is, hey, you guys, I hope you have fun tonight. Well, we are. Thank you, Toast. And he says, I went to see Coco this week and thought that of all the films recently released this week, it had the lowest chances of being watched by either Sharon or Sean. Brian, yeah. Which is a shame, as it's an amazing film. Lovely to look at. Some of the visuals are truly jaw on the floor. I know how they do that sort of way. And there is a great grandmother character in it, and the texturing of her face, when you consider that this is computer animated, it's just mind-boggling. So, you know, it's going to be a visual treat then. And it says here to me, Sharon, I know you have an aversion to animation. That's true. But if there's any way I could drag you to see this without physically dragging you to see this, then I would. This can be your animated quota for the next 2 years. The focus is on family and what it should and shouldn't mean, and it is just brilliant. The voice casts are excellent, especially Gael Garcia Bernal and Benjamin Bratt, once again wholeheartedly embracing his Hispanic heritage to animated comedic effect. Sorry, I'm just reading out loud, which is always tricky. And he also continues, this is also the first Pixar movie in which I remember it characters actively getting murdered in a typical Pixar fashion. So it's obviously not in your typical cartoon that we would normally expect, is it? And it works on one level for the adults and another one for the kids. The explanation and celebration of Mexico's Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos.
Los Muertos.
It says it's wonderfully done, and it leaves you thinking that dying might not be the end of the world, which could be weird. I think it's a beautiful sentiment, especially the way they do it in the movie. Also what it means to remember a loved one. And as it continues, it's heartwarming, starts off like you know where it's going, and then it suddenly does a curveball. And it doesn't always do the expect. Okay, it comes as a nice surprise. Sharon, get thee to a cinema. And he says, P.S., the songs are awesome. So I'm aware of this because I don't know if you've seen the trailer for it, but it's a trailer of this little boy who walks past a statue of this man playing with a guitar, and in his house music is banned because his father was a musician. And the only photograph he has of his father is a man wearing like this sort of mariachi-type suit, holding a guitar, but his face has been ripped off. So he doesn't even know what his dad looks like. And then I don't know how it happens, but in the trailer you see they're approaching the Day of the Dead, and by some mystical event, I think he's praying and it's sort of something happens. Anyway, he is taken, this living boy, he's taken and dropped into the land of the dead, where he then meets up with his recently deceased people. And I think the rules of the film are I don't know if it's the rules of how the culture works, but in the rules of the film, as long as someone is remembered in the land of the living, they exist in the land of the dead.
Right.
Right.
So, and they're seen as skeletons, but with personality. So they maintain something of what they used to look like, but they're in there, they're obviously, they have that, because you see that little death mask face, don't you, where they're decorated, highly decorated in the celebrations of the Day of the Dead. And they all look like that. They have that sort of look about them. But yeah, as long as you're remembered in the land of the living, then you exist in the land of the dead. But as soon as your last person who remembers you dies, then you disappear.
Oh, wow.
Right.
So that's in the trailer. So that's all I know. But obviously, Tozin, he obviously sees it as more than that. It's like a celebration of family, a celebration of remembering and holding on to your loved ones, in probably in a non-sentimental or in a sad way. Because some cultures, they don't talk about people who've died, do they? Because they worry that you're
that's
holding
right.
on to, you're not allowing them to move on to where they should be.
And it's, I mean, strange enough, the Native American Indians, we think it's quite barbaric with their scalping of people, but actually it was a deed of honor to scalp their enemy, because what it did, it released the spirit of the dead person.
Right.
And that's why they took their scalps. It was a releasing of the spirit.
Yeah, it's a different complexion, right, isn't it? Rather than a trophy hunting.
We spoke about the film Hostiles, didn't we? Yes. The other day. There's a bit of scalping in that.
Going in that.
And it you know, I learned that from Last of the Mohicans a long way back, working on that. And that was the reason they actually scalped people. And so if Indians knew that this was somewhere where people were buried, they'd be very afraid, because they wouldn't necessarily know that the person who was buried there had been scalped or not.
Oh, so they could still be...
Their spirit would still be exist there. In an avenging form, sort of thing, you know.
So you worked on Last Mohicans?
I did, the BBC one.
Oh, the BBC
one,
I was going to say, right, yeah. I was going to say, I got really excited then. No. But yeah, I know the TV, no, that's no. okay.
Right,
that's
a different right guy.
Yeah.
It's funny, I think with Brian, it must be we must come from the same era, because, I mean, that's a real... I am really, really, really interested in Native Americans, you know. I mean, the Plains Indians and so,
the different
yeah.
cultures.
Which is well, what this I enjoyed. Is, well, which I saw Hostiles twice.
Yeah.
That's worth it.
After you'd reviewed it last week, I was thinking about perhaps getting to see it, because it's probably, along maybe with the Aborigines, the most subversive Native culture ever. You know, there is just nothing really to show that America was a Native American Americans country.
Mm-hmm.
And you find the thing about the mech that they did with Coco as well is, in some ways, is like what people would be calling like cultural appropriation, haven't they? Mm-hmm. Like with the Day of the Dead, people dress up and they look like it without actually being part of that culture. And that's happened with Native American cultures, hasn't it? That people have appropriated it by taking some of the looks, the jewellery or some of the things, and then like claiming it without giving due reference or due honour to the culture that it's part of.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Because to find this, it used to really annoy me a few years ago, where everyone was into tribal tattoos. And I would say, well, that tribal tattoo could say I'm a complete idiot. Because... if it's not a part of your culture, then you are appropriating something that's not your culture and using symbols that mean something. Like I've just killed a whale or something, and yet you're wearing it as a piece of decorative body art.
Yeah, definitely.
And I used to find that quite difficult to get my head around, thinking, why would you appropriate something that's not your own? By all means, get like a Celtic dragon on your arm, because if you're English, because it's, you know, it might be part of your culture, but why put a tribal tattoo on it when you're not part of that tribal heritage?
Fashion.
But purely for fashion, it's just, to me, it was just offensive.
Yeah.
But so I probably won't be painting my face like a skull and wearing dots on my eyes, because that's not my culture. But I think it's interesting that with Coco, to see another culture's experience of how they treat death, because we tend to shy away from it. And especially for children, we don't really talk about death unless a pet dies. And then we sort of go, well, we tend to say, well, they've gone to heaven without really trying to give any more meaning to that.
They do actually dress up the dead people, don't they, as well? And sometimes bring them out for lunch and stuff.
Well, in some cultures, I know it's not our way. We have closed coffins, don't we? After someone's died, you can go to see someone when they're lying in rest. But generally, people after they've died, that's it. That's you it. Don't it's see them again. Mm. Whereas in a lot of cultures, they do have coffins where they're open coffins, aren't they?
Yeah.
Where you do see them after they're before they're buried. Which I would, I don't know how comfortable I'd be with that, but it's not part of my what I've been growing up with, I suppose.
I might have to go and see Coco then, Tozen. I might try and put that on my list, and then so if you're listening, Tozen, I will try and catch it, and then I can perhaps say about it next week.
Yeah, well, Tozen's given it a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
Wow. So he obviously rates it. He does like his animation. I think it sort of communicates to him, and I think he's really rated films in the past. Mm. And normally, I normally submit and give in and go to see one a year. I think the last one I saw was Finding Dory, and I surprised myself that I actually liked it.
No, I've not seen Finding Dory.
I went to see Finding Dory.
Well, yeah. No.
But so I normally manage one a year. So maybe this might be the one, but don't know. I can't swear that I'll go and see it. But yeah, 4 out of 5.
It might persuade me as well, but I'm not sure. Right, Sean.
Yes.
The Commuter.
The Commuter. Here we go, The Commuter. Yeah, well, what have we got? We've got Liam Neeson and one of the roles he seems to
is this Taken 4.5?
Taken 4.5, you know, Non-Stop, all those films. So basically, Liam Neeson's a commuter. Used to be a cop, but he's a commuter. He loses his job, and then he's sat on the train going home, and he thinks, he's just wondering about what's he going to do. And then this woman approaches him and says, in the bathroom, there's an envelope with £25,000. You're a cop. You should be able to find it. If you find it, there's another 75 for you at the end. But what you need to do is you need to find this one person on the train. You need to use your skills to go through the train and find out who this one person is. So, of course, he's really sceptical. He's not particularly sure. But anyway, he goes to the bar, he finds this 25 grand, and he thinks, and then he finds out that once he's started it, he's stuck in this because they say, you've got to do it now because we know where your family are, and they've got lots of information about him, and it seems like this big, big conspiracy. Of course, he worries, and it's going through so basically that's the premise of the film. This film, I mean, I didn't, the first Taken was good, the other two Taken not so good, but okay. Non-Stop, interesting. This for me was it just fell on its it was just this to me was, I just really, really thought this film was daft.
I feel absolutely that I've seen, daft. I haven't seen The Commuter, but I feel that I've seen this story before.
Yeah.
Where what something looks like it's a simple task suddenly becomes not so simple and becomes more complicated, and then it becomes too complicated, and then you just think, oh, behave.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I practically had this worked out from the beginning of the film, really. I thought, oh, yeah, because, you know, there's this, at the start, he loses his job, he goes to a bar, meets a cop who's a friend of his, and there's a bunch of other police in the corner which aren't particularly nice, and they go, oh, we don't like each other and all that. So you think, oh, yeah, there's the bad guy, there's the good guy, yeah. you know. So you can basically, for me anyway, I thought, yeah, I know who's who. So no surprises there. The action scenes. One thing with me, as Sharon will know and Tozen knows, that if something happens,
yeah, that people should act logically, shouldn't they?
Beyond the realms of possibility, that just really, really annoys me. It just angers me, and I think, why would you do that? Like car chases with a car that goes on for 15 minute car chase, batters, goes into things, goes through barriers, goes this, and it still goes. You know,
never stalls, never runs out of petrol. No. You can drive 300 miles.
The radiator never goes, anything like that, and I get a little bit annoyed with things like that. But in this, we all know what toughened glass is, don't we? If you bang your head on toughened glass, or on something like that, your head's going to go crack, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's not going to go through. I mean, if I went up and tried to smack, put someone's head through that window there, it just the head would just bounce off, and there'd be a nasty, But these windows just like,
is this in a train especially
it just goes
yeah
you don't, you know what I mean, it, yeah. they don't even the head doesn't even touch it, and it
it
shatters, you know, into 1,000 pieces as well. It doesn't crack and hold. It just shatters, right? Which is ridiculous.
Which is what they're not designed to do on a train, isn't it?
No,
exactly.
Because there's actually, at one time, there's a weapon wielded, which is for, you know, like on buses and coaches and trains and things, you have to... You know, you have to hit the window, don't you, in one particular spot.
Yeah, then we say the bottom corner, because that's like the weaker point, isn't it, or something.
So, like this. So, yeah, even that's using it. But no, someone's head will go, you know, four windows and still went. But the person would still be able to, you know.
Get up and kick you a few times.
Fight, you know, and it's just like, come on, why would you do this? And I know it's action. I know some people love it. And I think it's got fairly good reviews. But there is some bad reviews as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was just looking for one.
I'm sure there must be some bad reviews. But no, for me, this film was, it was no Taken. There's not a lot more you can say about it. And Liam Neeson wasn't particularly good. He wasn't believable. The ending was a farce. So I don't know if you want to fire some questions. You've got some reviews, have you?
There's one particular review here. It says, Liam Neeson has been bedeviled on an airplane. He's been bedeviled on a train. And at this point, I'm wondering if he's going to find trouble with every other form of public transport.
that's a great one. That's a great one.
You do not want to be on a plane, train or automobile with Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson.
And I'm with you, Sean. This is why I'm not a great fan of action films, because the action is overstated action. And kind of almost linking back to the Day of the Dead, the start of Spectre, the Bond film.
That was in the Bond. Yeah.
Now, I really thought this is going to be a great film, because the very first shot is one huge continuous development shot right the way through, where it follows him, it follows a group, he goes upstairs, he goes through, and then there's the gunshot from one place building to the other and things. And then suddenly there's this bit where he's on the helicopter, and the helicopter's spinning round and on the point of crashing, and he's hanging out the door. And I switched off then.
Yeah, I know. And that happens to me in a lot of films. I mean, even in some... We've had this discussion so many times. Even in some fantasy films, you know, you can if
they're going to have the laws of physics,
if it's believable, if they're
going to
have the laws of physics. I mean, for instance, with the new, I know we're going off track a bit here, but with the new Spider-Man film, he's got a suit, but purely he's got all the suit because Stark Industries, Iron Man, who's like the super tech whiz, whatever, gave him the suit, because the first suit he had was a, you know, onesie with onesie with the some swimming goggles. You know what I mean? And he just says, "Look, you need an upgrade." But that's quite feasible, because he's got all that technology, because he's got so much money, and because so he can actually, you know, having that suit makes much more sense, because the guy's a young guy with no money. You know,
And I mean, I there are action sequences that I love. The beginning of the first Daniel Craig.
In Casino Royale.
Where they're going across the cranes and things like that. That is absolutely nail-biting. I was on the edge of my chair for that.
Yeah.
And that's a brilliant sequence.
Yeah.
Because there is the peril, isn't there? There's the idea that he could come a cropper with that.
Yeah.
I think that's the idea. You've got to have a sense of peril with these things. When you know that they're bulletproof and nothing can touch them, that they can, you know, be in 25 fights without going, oh, that... Yeah. You know, that hurts.
Yeah.
And they're just up and running. And he's an older man. And even though I haven't seen the film, you think, an older man, is he going to be able to have like 25 fights on a train, moving train, being bashed and bullied back without sort of going, oh, my back, or oh, that bit hurts. Yeah. And you think, it's not quite feasible, is it, that it's got to be believable, hasn't it?
Yeah. That's for me. I'm glad you agree with me on that point, because it can really, really spoil... You know, really spoil a movie for me. Just one thing like that can, like, really switch me off straight away.
On that note, we'll take some ad break, and we'll see if there's some redeeming features for the commuter. afterwards.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, Isle of Wight's community station.
local fundraiser Ian Gregory is cycling 2,000 miles around Australia to raise money for four local charities, dubbed the White Unity Heroes, as well as national charity Prostate Cancer UK. The White Unity Heroes are Challenge and Adventure, Isle of Wight Pride, Layla's Trust and the Isle of Wight Zoo. You can donate via a dedicated Just Giving link, or you can give cash donations at Challenge and Adventure in Lugley Street, Newport, or at the Isle of Wight Zoo. And if you're a business, you can become a corporate sponsor to help fund Ian's costs. A donation of just £50 via his GoFundMe page will get you advertising throughout 2018 at various fundraising events. For more information, head to Facebook and search White Unity Heroes.
Livewire Electric Shop, for all your domestic appliance needs. Appliance sales, repairs, spare parts and TVs. There are 5 and 7 year warranties available on selected brands. Find us in Orchard Street, Newport, or call us on 01983 522 420. Livewire, your one-stop appliance shop.
Isle of Wight Studio Glass at Arrowton Barnes Craft Village is one of the leading British glassmaking studios and has a reputation worldwide. The studio is open 7 days a week and you can come and watch master glassmaker Timothy Harris create his amazing designs. A visit to Isle of Wight Studio Glass also offers an opportunity to purchase a piece of glass that you will treasure for always. You can also buy online at isleofwightstudioglass.co.uk or call us on 522 339.
Jewson, the national name with a local heart. We see the Four P's project as a fantastic opportunity for young people to gain valuable life skills and receive opportunities that may have passed them by. Congratulations to Vectis Radio for taking this initiative, a truly local community-based radio station. Jewson, the national name with a local heart. For kitchens and building materials, phone us on 525 111 or look for jewson.co.uk.
Sky Academy helps young people unlock their potential through TV, creativity and sport.
Turning my dream into a reality.
Kickstarting my career.
And helping me build confidence.
Through fantastic mentors and great opportunities.
We're discovering possibilities we never knew existed.
We believe in potential. Search Sky Academy to see how it can help a young person you know.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
And we're back. And Sean.
Yes, Do you want to look, Bill? We were having an interesting conversation during that break. And we spoke about numerous car chases and fights and things. But yeah, okay. Back to the commuter. I could understand why some people would enjoy this because it is, you know, there's lots of action and they like all the action and they love all the action. But there's an actress in it, Vera Farmiga.
Yes, like I know that. Her, yeah.
And I've seen her in a few other things. She's not a prolific actor, I don't
know.
No,
think, she's been in a few things.
But she's been in a few things. And I quite like her, actually. I quite like her. So, but I didn't like her in this.
She was in a great film, a really indie, I think it was a French film a few years ago, set on a vineyard, where this guy saw an angel, and I can't think of the name of the film.
I saw that one, but yes, I can't think of the name of it.
She's in that. Yeah. It's a very good film. Yeah. Really nice sort of little indie film that's a bit quirky and a bit odd, but yeah, great little film. She's in that.
Yeah, well, normally she's quite convincing for me in some movies, but in this, she's obviously the one that you know, makes the proposition, well, if you want the money. I just didn't believe her. I just thought, nah, something really doesn't really work. But then maybe this is a sort of film where we're not supposed to have the great acting because it's all to do with the action.
Right.
Some of the characters on the train and how he's going through, do I find it? Are they weekly, are they monthly commuters, or are they day trippers? Do we find a day tripper? They go into the end of the stop. And he spends the time walking up and down the carriage. And, you know, and then some people say, oh, yeah, he's acting a bit, this person's acting a bit strange. And someone says, oh, I know him, he's all right, he's fine. You know, why does he keep going up and down this train? And certain people get off at certain stops. And obviously he asks different people, other people that are on the train, other passengers, he goes, oh, I don't know you, you know, you don't come here. And he gets in this game of cards and he's trying to find out some information. There's a mate of his and there's this other chap that he hasn't seen before. And he's like, you know, yeah, it's really, he's wondering, is this the guy? Is this the person who I've got to find? And then it turns out that this guy has actually been, you know, on the train before. So, yeah, it's going to all these, you know, yeah, it just, for me, it was a pretty awful experience.
Pretty standard then.
Pretty standard, yeah. I quite enjoyed Taken. I thought that was a good movie. But now I think he did another one called a Walk Among the Tombstones, I think, a while ago, which is a similar sort. That was pretty good. But, you know, Liam, you really, really need to stop doing these sort of movies.
You're getting
you're getting past it. You know, you're not at Spring Chicken anymore, and I think you need to
settle down a little bit. Played out.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it was meant to be, you know,
it's final.
A comedy film. I don't know. I don't know.
What would you rate it then?
Possibly a 2 at the max, the most. And I mean, that's being generous. That's being really, really generous with this film. But that is a personal opinion, don't forget.
Right.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
of course,
there may be some people that.
You think it's the best film of the year and they'll buy it on DVD?
Oh, it's the worst film of the year I've seen at the moment, I think, so far. I mean, I know we're fairly...
Third week of January,
but this is at the bottom at the moment. I'm sure there will be worse.
There could
but
be.
But at the moment, this one hits the low point.
Another quirky aside then from Brian. Liam Neeson, you talked just about him walking up and down this train and things like that. He was on Graham Norton the other day and was saying, actually, it was all filmed in a studio with green screen backing, and there was 2 coaches for the entire train.
Wow.
And that was it. And they had to shoot it from all sorts of different angles and things like that with the green screen. So all the bits where you see it rushing along with the countryside outside, there was nothing there.
Nothing.
It was
there.
Just green screen, which is... a way they save a lot of money these days.
That would save millions, wouldn't it? Then,
yeah, it would really. And I mean, so I guess that's like with crashes and things. If they green screen it, you know, it's you know, well, if it was green screened, it was quite that part of it. Possibly, I don't know. I didn't notice the green screen too much. Mm. So they obviously did a good job there. So yeah. Maybe that's one saving point. That's why it's the 2-star.
we were looking for saving points on the commute. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
The green screen was good.
The green screen was good then. That was obviously...
No fuzzy edges.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Sam Neill. Now, you know Sam Neill?
Yes.
Yeah, Sam Neill was in it. Yeah, he was okay. So we could maybe... Yeah, he wasn't in it long enough, perhaps.
To redeem it,
yeah.
He was very good in Peaky Blinders.
Was he?
I think that's
you
the last thing I saw.
Everybody goes on about this Peaky Blinders.
I've not seen it either.
Love it.
See, everybody, yeah. Loads of people say it's marvellous.
He was in the first 2 seasons of Peaky Blinders.
All right.
He's an American, though. No, South Africa. Or was he Australian? I can't remember. He's one of them. What does he play in this?
He's Antipodean,
say. Yeah, yeah.
I think he might be originally a Kiwi who then lived in Australia. Now he lives in New Zealand.
Right.
I think he was that sort of Aussie or Aussie Kiwi.
Somewhere down that
hybrid.
Way. And he plays an Aussie in this, does he?
I don't know.
Oh,
okay. I'm not the one who saw it.
Oh, right. No, I meant in...
in Peaky Blinders. Oh, no, he plays Irish.
Irish. He's an
Northern Ireland. It's Northern Ireland, police officer.
Right.
All right. Okay. I, again, like you, Sean, sometimes there's films that which are hyped up and you think, I'm really going to look forward to this and go and see it. And in the end, you come out and you think, that'll scrape a 1 or 2 out of me in terms of, what I would give it.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah. I mean, some people I could imagine would love this movie. People, you know, because people love the Fast and Furious movies and they make a fortune. And if this makes money, well, I think someone might actually said, who was it? It might have been Joe that said that they're talking about making a sequel to it. I don't know how they can make a sequel to it. But they made like 3 Takens, haven't they? And, you know, so I think they try and, if something makes money, they try and make more of it. Don't they?
Sorry about that.
Oh, we're all going to be dancing in the moonlight or something, aren't we?
Dancing in the moonlight.
I'm not quite sure what happened there.
So have you seen many, how many Liam Neeson films have you seen?
Recently, I saw the first two Taken films.
Right. And?
I didn't see the third. I thought they were entertaining for what they were. Yeah. I thought the first one was good, but, you know.
Well, that's just including a little bit of music, jumping in there, just about it for this week. We three will be back, stirring the pot with the movies next week.
Yes.
I'm not sure what I'll... Well, I think I'll be seeing The Darkest Hour in between, so...
Give us your opinion on that one.
Give us and maybe The Post, if you manage to catch The Post.
Good night from Sharon.
Vectis Radio.
Good night.
FM 104.6.